so many people, myself included, moved in the last 2 years. I think 2020 had us all looking at our homes and asking ourselves if our current lifestyles were truly working for us or if it was time for a change. As you know, Billy and I desired more space, more nature, and a new opportunity to grow together in a new environment, which is why we moved to upstate New York. And our new home presented me with the opportunity to start evaluating what an outdoor garden would look like, which inspired that first garden series that you've been hearing over the last months. It's been so fun. An interesting question that rose up as we moved and stared at our new surroundings, our new gardening zone, and a bit of overwhelm was, now what? Where do I start? I've heard this question from so many of you, so many members of our community who also, like us, made big moves this year and found themselves looking at their new landscapes and gardens with wide eyes and lots of questions. So today, plant friends, I invited Stephen Orr, the editor of one of my favorite magazines and a gardener going through this process himself, to join me for a conversation about his journey to rejuvenating and experimenting with his new garden and home on Cape Cod. I hope this conversation provides you with strategies for moving past the yikes, now what overwhelm many new homeowners are feeling with their new gardens and landscapes, and inspires you to stay curious, experiment, and always growing. Welcome to episode 133 of Bloom and Grow Radio. Plant friends, hello. I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks. We are getting so close to my wedding, plant friends. Oh my God. It's the first weekend of October. So many crazy things going on with it right now, but Billy and I are so excited to get married, and I'm so excited to bring you our planty wedding series to come in the next couple of months once the wedding is over. It's been so fun seeing a little influx of people in the Garden Party platform after last week's episode on Plant Parent Confessions. If you want to join us in the private platform that I've created for our listeners to make more plant friends, cultivate your knowledge, and grow more joy in your lives, head over to jointhegardenparty.com to check it out. Okay, today's conversation, it was such a fun chat. You're going to hear as I start gushing in the beginning of the interview, but I really live for the moment Better Homes and Gardens arrives in my mailbox every month, and Martha Stewart Living. It's like they're my two indulgences that I feel like I treat myself to every month, especially since we moved to the country and we've had more space. So I've been looking for more inspiration. The magazine always gives me ideas that I could kind of translate into my home. An interesting thing, I'm not a big editor's letter girl, but I've always noticed that I've really enjoyed Stephen's editor's letters in Better Homes and Gardens. And so I ended up following him on Instagram because I was just curious to learn more about him and became very captivated by the home and garden rejuvenation that he's documenting on his account of his recently acquired home on Cape Cod. Completely different gardening zone for him, completely different setup, and he's kind of just been showing the steps that he's taking and the experiments that he's doing in his home. So I invited him to come on the podcast today for a chat because I know that so many of us are first-time homeowners, or we've inherited or gotten a new garden with a lot of land, and we don't know where to start. And the beauty of Stephen is that he's an experienced gardener. So even though he's going through the process that we're all going through, he's a few more steps ahead, and he shares a lot of thoughtful insights on how, where, and when to dive into tackling a new garden project. So I'm so excited to introduce you to him. So why don't we dive right in? Stephen, I am so excited to have you on Bloom and Grow Radio today. Welcome.
Thank you, Maria.
Oh my gosh. I'm excited for two different reasons. Number one, I feel like this summer I've been living vicariously through your Instagram because I was very much hoping to buy and develop my first piece of property. Didn't work out. So I've loved watching what you've been up to. And also, I have to say, I'm coming out publicly. I'm a huge fan of Better Homes and Gardens. It's the highlight of my month when I get that magazine in my mailbox. Fantastic. It's such a sacred, quiet coffee moment for me. I always learn about a new gardener. I always try and connect with them on Instagram after I read about them. The highlights you guys do are so awesome. So it's such a fun dual thing to get to fangirl with you today.
Great. Well, thank you. We hear that from people a lot that when the magazine arrives, they actually kind of set it out as like a goal for Thursday night, a glass of wine or iced tea or something, and just relaxation time. And so that's what we try to do, especially because, you know, the world is so crazy. So we're trying to offer a respite, I guess, through creativity in your home. So that's kind of the goal. So I'm glad it makes you feel that way as well.
Oh, totally. And I've totally stolen a bunch of recipes, ripped them out of the magazine and put them on my fridge and killed at parties with them this summer as well.
Good.
So I've alluded to the fact that you're at Better Homes and Gardens, but you've had such an interesting career, but also kind of experience as a plant person. So how did you become the plant person that you are today?
I'd have to credit my dad and my mom. I grew up in the 70s, so houseplants were a big deal. So I was kind of just always drawn to plants my whole life, especially flowers. Since a very young age, I was drawing flowers and I just was always drawn to flowers. I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. And so being a little kid, I was very interested. My mom was, it was the 70s. So houseplants were a big deal. We had the whole macrame window, all the hanging baskets.
Which is so back in now too.
I know. And I was there for that rendition of it, which was kind of a repeat of Victorian times in a way when, when houseplants were popular then. But I just was drawn to that idea of plants. You know, I was like most kids, I wasn't interested in chores, but if it was helping my mom with the houseplants, I was interested. Or if it was helping my dad with gardening, I was interested. I wasn't interested in the lawn, mowing the lawn, even though that was a chore and I didn't have to do it. I tried to get out of that by claiming a grass allergy or something. But when it was to work in the garden with my dad, we just had a great time. I grew up in Abilene, Texas. And so my dad grew up on a farm in North Texas. So I think I'm kind of a first generation non-farmer on both sides, really. My mother kind of grew up on a farm in South Texas. So for me, it's just maybe it's something with them that kind of like tying back to the soil or something. So when my dad would get out in the back, and he only did it when we were young kids, he stopped as soon as we got in junior high, but he grew vegetables. So I would, and roses and stuff. So I would just help him. I'd learn to feed the roses, or I would watch him take a milk carton and protect the tomato and pepper seedlings in the springtime with he would put like an open paper milk carton on that as kind of a frost protection or something. I was like his little shadow. So I would just tag along with him. So I think that's how it really started. Then I kind of, when I went into junior high and high school, I stopped doing it. And then when I moved to New York City to work in magazines, I was lucky enough to find an apartment that, first of all, it was a studio. And then the apartment opened up at the top that had a penthouse. It was very small though. So it was like two rooms on top of each other. But the good part was it had this gigantic outdoor space with a sliding glass door and a hose hookup. So I kind of made an illegal garden there. I just started doing stuff, and it was on West 19th Street in Chelsea. And that was just, at that point in the 80s and the early 90s, in New York in the early 90s, it was more doable to find that place. And we had three roommates in a tiny space, but it was great experience for me. And that's where I really first started getting interested in it. And then I just started reading garden books for like 10 years. It was pre-internet. So I just read garden books for 10 years and educated myself. So I'm really a self-taught gardener. I may have taken one propagation course at the New York Botanical Garden, but other than that, I've never taken any classes in it.
Oh my God, we have so many overlapping things. I've taken all the New York Botanical Garden courses. I almost got evicted for gardening on my roof. totally been there as a New Yorker. That's amazing. Great. So in the 70s, I'm curious what plants were popular in your house. If they were blooming, did you have the Easter cactus? Did you have the African violets? Yes. Do you remember what your mom's collection was?
Yeah, she did African violets. And in fact, that was funny you mentioned, that was my Mother's Day present to her for many years when I was really little. So we had, remember, étagères. That was always a thing you had in your house, étagère. It was like a fancy shelf. And so she had those full of African violets, and I would go get them at Wolf Nursery in Abilene, Texas. And then my dad and I would go get that every year. And, I didn't, until later when I came back for college, I was like, those are the same plants. They're alive. African violets live forever. And my mom was, I guess she was pretty technique oriented. So she would do the whole thing with she knew how to grow them. She did the little pebble trays for humidity, and she knew how to not water from the top on the African violets. And then she really, really loved holiday cactuses, anything from Thanksgiving to Christmas. I forget which ones do what at what time, but I knew there were several times. And she would do the thing where you put them in the closet and give them darkness and encourage them to bloom in that way. So she was kind of technique oriented. And then my dad was outdoors doing stuff, and he would show me. I remember him showing me how to feed the roses when I was like six or something. And so I think it connected me to soil and to plants. And I kind of, since then, have always tried to be in a place where I could have a little space to garden.
That's so special. Yeah. And now you've got your new piece of property that I'm going to grill you about in this episode. How many gardens have you had in the course of your lifetime?
Well, I mean, I would say that in childhood, I just grew up with my parents' house. But that first garden on 19th Street mm-hmm. was a roof garden. I had that for 15 years or so. Then we moved to Queens and we have a co-op garden because Queens has all these co-op buildings. Yeah, and in New York City, co-ops are the kind of collectively owned apartment buildings that are pretty large. And they have a lot of gardens there. So we garden there. I had a little lake house upstate that was a really tiny little cabin, and that had a garden, but it was really hard to grow much of anything other than daffodils and foxgloves. There were so many deer, and the soil was very clay and heavy. The soil was just like digging in a, you know, you could make pottery right there mm-hmm. from the soil. It was so clay heavy. So that was, you know, the kind of discouraging between the deer, the shade, and the heavy soil. So that was a challenge. I did grow stuff, but it was never easy. And then I got Better Homes and Gardens job required me to move to Des Moines. So I had a little garden in Des Moines, but I was back and forth with New York a lot. So that became more of a container garden, kind of like my roof. And that was a lot of fun for me. That was just enough for me to be able to keep tended. So I had these big planter boxes. So I would do salads and, you know, all that kind of growing, but edibles. I've migrated a lot to growing things I can eat, partly because I also wrote a book on herbs called The New American Herbal that came out some years ago, 5 years ago. I'm not sure exactly.
Every herb's in there.
Yeah. So A to Z. And that really got me intrigued by herbs, which is one of my big fascinations. So I had that Des Moines garden for a while, sold that place. And we wanted a kind of a what's next scenario. And even with COVID and work from home, I've been able to be up here. You know, COVID is a tragedy, and work from home has its pluses and minuses. You know, we've all seen with isolation and kind of figuring out your routine and work-life balance and boundaries for people and people who have kids at home. But the good side is that I've been able to be up here. We bought a place on Cape Cod, and it's been nice to be here almost every day so that I can kind of see how the garden progresses. That would never have happened before because I will need to go back to Des Moines and New York when we go back to work, and that's a moving target with Delta. It's been a time of uncertainty. So I've been kind of creating a garden here that doesn't require, I can't act like I'm going to be here. So yeah, it's kind of a garden I'm creating. Yeah, it's kind of a garden I'm creating experimentally to see what will work, but it's not like I can count on being here to tend it. So I have to be very careful what I plant. So it's an interesting time to create a garden for sure.
Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. And it sounds like your experience really mimics a lot of what I think a lot of our listeners are going through with their first time home buyers. I think you start with that, you know, I started with a 9-square-foot balcony garden in Long Island City. You had your roof garden, all containers, all herbs. I was obsessed with cutting chives and scrambling them into my eggs. Like that was my gateway drug. Morning. Oh, really? we love chives here. And then you go a little bit larger and okay, well, maybe I'll have 10 containers this time. Okay, now I'm going to do the co-op. Then we're going to do raised beds. Okay, now we're going to try in-ground. Also, oh my God, I'm upstate. The deer pressure here is unbelievable and devastating. Yeah. I know to all the listeners in the community that's upstate, it's the number one thing that we heard this year. Also,
they eat everything, even the things they say they don't eat.
They're terrible. You got to get a deer fence. And then also Des Moines, secret, like most awesome city in the United States.
Yeah. Great city. Wonderful middle-sized city. Really is.
Yeah. Des Moines great. I used to tour as an actress and Des Moines was always like one of my favorite stops because
we have a great performing arts center there too. So you must have performed there.
Yeah, I've been there several times.
Oh, and great.
The food scene is amazing. The art scene is amazing. You've got the nice little water. So anyway, shout out to the Des Moines listeners.
I kind of had clay soil there too. So I had the same bad soil there. You really do have to, we can get into some tips and lessons, but I would say figuring out what the soil is, I'm looking out the window, is the main thing, because what I've learned over the years is trying to force something to happen is only going to lead you to either get frustrated and likely stop being a gardener because you think you're a bad gardener and basically maybe have bad soil, or maybe you're not using the plants that might be okay in that soil. So this is very sandy soil. So it's the opposite of the clay soil that I've had for the past two times. So
yeah, and a very different climate. So when you were evaluating buying a house, you knew that you wanted to buy on the Cape?
Well, yes. It was kind of like what's next. And then the Cape kind of emerged. So that's how that worked. Yeah.
And was your landscape and the existing gardens on the property, like, was that a part of your evaluation? Because I feel like whenever we drive around looking at property, I'm always like, okay, that's where the garden could go.
Yeah, me too. It was very much, where can I make a garden? Okay. That was key. We wanted an old house with character, and then I wanted some way to garden. And there was a couple places we saw that we kind of almost got lured into being interested in. But in retrospect, I'm so happy we didn't progress, because looking back, I'd be like, there's no way. I tried to talk myself into the fact I could make a garden there, but it would be impossible. So
yeah.
So this place is relatively flat and very sunny and open. So that's all really good to have. You know, I'm not fighting a forest, which I was in upstate, and I'm not fighting deer because we have coyotes here and turkeys. So we have coyotes that keep the deer population down. So I've been up here most of the time since March, and I've seen one deer the whole time.
Wow. So, oh my God.
So coyotes cause their own trouble. You know, coyotes are bad for people, small pets. And I think there was even a news story today about some coyote was menacing a little kid or something. But yeah, coyotes have their own problems. But for me, I'm putting up with the coyotes, which I would never see anyway, because they're so sneaky. And it's been nice not to have deer marauding through all the time. But we have tons of rabbits. So
totally. Yeah. And I think what I'm learning as I talk to more and more listeners, everybody has something, right? If it's not rabbits, it's porcupine, it's head.
What's your challenge? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's always something.
Shade, but I think, deep shade. Yeah. All the stuff.
Totally. But I think it is interesting, probably, if you're moving someplace new, to be aware of whatever that animal pressure is, to kind of figure that out before you start planting. So congratulations, you successfully were able to buy property in the crazy, you know, housing surge.
We kind of snuck in. The realtor told us that actually we wouldn't have been able to afford it even a month later. It was kind of a strange listing. It went on the market on December 23rd, which is a very strange time to list your house, right? Usually in normal times, they'd say, well, why would you do that? When we put the bid in 24th and bought it. So we bought it on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
So, you know, things are competitive, as we talk about now, and there's a lot of issues about housing and all sorts of things that are, you know, we could get into social things. But really, it was kind of just dumb luck and persistence. And also, I think the realtor decided that, you know, the realtor can do whatever they want. They can push as hard as they want. And I think the realtor decided, hey, they really want to be here. Me and my husband, we really, you know, he knew we wanted to be here. And I think he lives nearby. So I think he also was like, well, maybe they'll be okay here. Like, we're the kind of people who aren't going to tear the house down and put up a big mansion. You know, we're going to try to work with this old house. It's going to be hard and a challenge, but that's what we want to do. We want to preserve the character. And then we want to figure out some way to ultimately later on do something that gives back to the community somehow, either a business or something that's works with the community. We don't just want to come here and take up space and have a house that's not used for most of the year. This house will be used most of the year, if not all the year. Mm-hmm. And ultimately we hope to end up here all the time, keep our little apartment in Queens and maybe pop back there when it gets really gray in the winter on the Cape, which it does. So
yeah,
that's the plan.
The Cape winter, the Cape summer. I mean, the winter, the Cape indoors is so brutal. And Billy, my fiance's family's from there. We spend a lot of time on the Cape. But one of the most visceral memories I have of plants and flowers specifically is like going for a walk with Billy's family on the Cape. It was after a long winter. It was kind of that gray moment. There was, yeah. It was all gray, all dead grass. And there was one purple crocus just like sticking out of the snow.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was kind of magical just because you kind of see it on even living in upstate New York, it felt different. And that crocus really spoke to me in that moment.
I don't think I've ever seen such a long, we closed on the house in like early March. And I think I've been here most days, except for a few visits back to New York. I do want to get back to New York soon. I actually stopped going in August because it's been so hot. It was actually really hot here too. And the thought of leaving this place, which was pretty hot, to go to New York, which is really hot, in New York, I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. So I have the luxury of working from home, as I said. So I'm on the same page as you. I need things to look forward to. So I've already placed my bulb order, of course, to make sure. And I want those very early bulbs. And I've planted those everywhere I've been. Bulbs are a huge interest of mine. And I love them so much because they're so easy. You know, you're buying a packet of a plant that's already prepackaged to go. You don't really have to worry about it. It's ready to bloom. And of course, we've all done bulbs that didn't come up for weird reasons. Some of them are a little bit persnickety, but most of them are so easy. And so at each garden I've had, one of the first things I did was put in a fair amount of bulbs, starting with, you know, the earliest ones, snowdrops, crocus. Mm-hmm. I love winter aconite, the little yellow winter aconite. That one's super early. And so that's going to be the challenge. And I think a lot of bulbs, because they're from the Mideast, kind of from Turkey area, around in there a little bit, Middle East, kind of Near East, the stands. Those bulbs, I think a lot of them like sandy soil, and they, a lot of them love and demand good drainage. So I'm hoping I'll have good luck here with sandy soil and bulbs. So that's my goal. Because it can be a very wet winter, and a lot of bulbs, there are some bulbs that like wet, but a lot of bulbs don't like to sit in the wet winter. They'll just rot. So that's the hope.
Yeah. And talk about giving back. I mean, bulbs are kind of the gift that never stops giving in terms of year after year. If you choose the right varieties, they keep coming back and multiplying. Yeah. And I feel like the snowdrops, crocus, are, you see them all over the Cape, as well as my ultimate passion, hydrangea. That's like on my vision board for my.
But you know what? I don't have a single one right now in this property. I have to get some, but this property is completely hydrangea-less right now.
Oh my gosh. I feel like hydrangeas and Cape are like synonymous to me.
They are, but strangely, you know, this is a very sandy soil place we live, and it's been really hot and dry this year. And hydrangea, which is kind of Greek for water bearer, wants water. So I think sometimes other parts of the Cape might be better with hydrangeas, although my neighbors have some. So I'm trying to figure out what pocket or what I need to do around here to get good hydrangeas on this piece of property, which is very sandy. So I'm going to see.
Well, that's tip number one. I feel like when you move to a new place, and I'm learning this, I've moved three times this year. When you move to a new place, tip number one, make friends with your neighbors. They'll tell you everything you need to know about your land.
Right. And just drive around and walk around and see what's thriving. You know, that's what I've been doing here is like, oh, that grows really well. You know, Vitex, the chase tree that blooms really late, the purple one, you know, I see that around a lot. I'm like, well, that'll be good to have. And the house is really old. It's two buildings put together. The front part of the house is a full Cape from, we're not quite sure yet. We're trying to get research with the Historical Society. We haven't really dove deep, but somewhere between 1750 and 1780 is the first part of the front part of the house. And the back part of the house is 1866 and seems to be part of a life-saving station on the Cape. And they both were moved here in the 1930s is what we're told by someone. And we're not sure who, and we're trying to figure all that out. But whoever did it did plant some stuff that is still here that is, I feel very lucky to have. And it was really great to move here in the kind of dead of late winter and watch the spring emerge, because I didn't know what would pop up. I knew I had lilacs, but I didn't know how well they'd bloom, and I knew they were overgrown. I love that the person who put the house here put lilacs at each corner. So that feels important to keep, you know, that intention that person wanted to ground the house with lilacs. I approve of that. So I just tried to rejuvenate them this year. They were all kind of, you know, overgrown. So I tried to cut half of them back so I can get them a bit rejuvenated and then still keep some flowers for next year. And they put a privet hedge, kind of a room with a privet hedge, but that's all kind of overgrown. So we're trying to rejuvenate that by cutting it back and letting it grow back more thickly. And then the other thing I'm really excited about right outside this window is Lily of the Valley. I've always planted it. I've never been around long enough for it to, you know, people say it's a thug and it spreads, but I don't mind. Mm-hmm. And seems to love sandy soil. And is, I can tell you, it's very drought tolerant because it's still green, even though we've had drought and hot weather. And so having that much Lily of the Valley is really nice too.
So what has your kind of vision and approach been? I mean, you've shared a little bit of insight into that of, okay, I've bought this house. There's history here in the garden, in the house. I want to honor it. Do you leave it for a year and watch the sun move and kind of see what spots are? And just, are you just trying to kind of revitalize what's existing? Are you actively trying to add to it? Like, for kind of first time home buyers, landscapers, like, how would you suggest, it could feel very overwhelming. How would you suggest kind of that approach?
Well, it depends on what kind of person you are. I'm impatient, but I'm also not a person who wants it to be perfect immediately. Mm-hmm. I'm impatient in the sense that I want to get gardening as soon as possible. And that's what I did. But this whole time, because of COVID, I've never known when I was leaving this place. So I arrived here in March, and then the original return to work date was kind of vague. Then it was June. Then it got moved to September. And then Delta announced move to October. So it's just been this moving target of when I'll be here and when I won't be here. Mm-hmm. So when I got here, there's not a lot to preserve other than, I'd say, the four lilacs. We're keeping the privet hedge, even though maybe it doesn't work because it's under a big tree. So we're trying to figure out if the shade is going to let it be successful. And the rest of it is adaptable, but I don't want to do any permanent moves until I know that I can be here to tend to it. Mm-hmm. So the good news about having to be so uncertain with the pandemic is that I've been able to tell myself, okay, you don't need to worry about doing anything permanent. Don't rush and just live with this place and see what happens for this period of time and do what you want to do to actively have the active gardening. But my key on that was make it impermanent. So I tried to do three experiments. So I've had three experiments here I've been working on that are impermanent experiments, meaning
I love that.
They're things that can change if I need them to.
Thanks to our episode sponsor, Soul Tech Solutions. Plant friends, if you are looking for a stylish way to meet your plants' lighting needs and your design desires, you've got to try Soul Tech Solutions Luxury Grow Lights. Soul Tech's mission is to make the integration of plants into indoor spaces as beautiful and effortless as possible, and they really nail it. They have a solution that works best for you, your home, and your plants, whether you need track lighting, pendant lights, or now their recently launched Vita LED Grow Bulbs, which is a grow light that simply screws into any traditional light fixture that you have. It's so easy. I've got them all over my desk. The Vita works like any normal grow bulb. It provides a beautiful warm white light while giving off that delicious photosynthetic spectrum that our plants need to grow. And they have a special bundle for you. So with the Green Fit bundle, you can buy three Vitas and get one free. That's a savings of up to $85. The Green Fit bundle allows you to create more plant-friendly spaces throughout your home without having to worry about your plants getting enough light. And there's no installation necessary because you're literally screwing a light bulb into a socket. So check out the Green Fit bundle for yourself at soultechsolutions.com in the bundle section and save today. Happy plants, happy home. It's that easy at soultechsolutions.com. Thank you so much to Territorial Seed Company for sponsoring today's episode. Plant friends, it's garlic time. Planted in the fall and harvested in the spring, this easy-to-grow crop rewards your efforts with long storage capability, unmistakable flavor, exceptional health benefits, and unmatched versatility. We just harvested our first homegrown garlic from Melody's garden, and it is so amazing. And dicing that garlic up to cook, it's like there's so much more ownership when you've grown it, Once you've tasted homegrown garlic, you really can't go back. And the cool thing is Territorial Seed Company, which they've been a long-term partner of Bloom & Grow Radio. We've been growing their high-quality seeds all summer. They have the most unreal variety of hard and soft-neck garlic. So whatever type of garlic you want, which P.S., there's so many different varieties of it, Territorial Seed Company has so many different options for you. It's prime time to get this staple into your garden and experiment if you haven't yet. We talk a lot about experimentation on this episode. And you also, when you plant garlic in the fall, you get to build that anticipation of harvesting it the following year. So check it out. Territorial Seed Company is hooking up our listeners with 10% off with the exclusive code BLOOM10 at checkout for you guys. So head to territorialseed.com, check out their list of garlic and their full selection of seeds and supplies, and use code BLOOM10 at checkout for 10% off. Okay, back to Stephen.
So, Joe, should I tell you what the three are?
Yes, please. Please.
You're like, no, I'm not interested.
We're good. Right, we don't want to know. Maybe later.
sounds a little boring. Anyway, the three experiments are: the property has a chain link fence around what was a dog run because the previous owner bred boxers professionally. I think she even went to Westminster and stuff. So she had like maybe 7 boxers back there. So it's this kind of, you know, ugly area with a lot of gravel and a chain link fence. So ultimately the chain link fence is going to go replaced by, I'm not sure what yet, but we left the chain link fence up right now just for rabbits and stuff. And then what I thought we'd do is I was like, I love a gravel garden. And here we are next to the ocean. You know, some days I can hear the bay waves and some days I can hear the ocean waves. So we're at the very narrow part of the Cape. And so it's really nice to honor that the ocean's right here. So I don't want to make a garden that isn't reflective of the place that we're in, which is sandy, maritime, needs to put up with nor'easters, but still has, you know, has warmth in the summer, has cold, wet springs and long, warm falls. So doing magazines, because I was a garden editor before I was the editor-in-chief of Better Homes and Gardens, I was the garden editor at Martha Stewart Living and House and Garden and Domino. And so I've done all these stories and I've always loved the look of gravel gardens, particularly Mediterranean looking gravel gardens and also seaside gardens. Like there's a famous gardener, Derek Jarman, who is a filmmaker and he died some decades ago, but he created this beautiful garden on the south coast of England that next to a nuclear power plant. So it's a very kind of wasteland looking place, but he created this garden out of what they call shingle, which is just gravelly rock. It kind of made a big splash in the kind of the 90s and stuff. And so it's very much on my radar. And I thought, oh, this kind of, and there's some pieces of wood laying around like old black locust. And I was like, I think we could take this whole space, get rid of the weeds, which we haven't done quite yet. But part of it is deep gravel that doesn't have much weeds. So that's the part I started experimenting with. So what I did was I started researching and thinking of plants that are good in sandy soil, good in gravel, good next to the ocean. So I actually looked for plants that have the second name Maritima or Maritima, you know, maritime.
Oh, yeah. So, I love that. That's so smart.
So I was looking for plants like Eryngium, which is a sea thistle, sea holly, another kind of a thistle-y plant. Even something fragile seeming like Alyssum. Alyssum is Alyssum Maritima, right?
Oh, my favorite. What am I, sweet Alyssum?
Yeah, sweet Alyssum, which everyone thinks is, you know, I think of it as a very delicate little plant. But so what I did was in the spring, I thought, well, I'm just going to try this. So I'm not going to worry about design and how it looks. So I'm just going to give myself the freedom to not worry about a design and trying to tell people that this is the permanent solution. I just want it to be an experiment with the plant. So I've read these books by this guy named Olivier Filippi, and he's written 2 books about dry gardening and gravel gardening. One of his big theses is that to get these plants that really thrive on tough, kind of lean conditions, just dig the hole, don't put any soil in, no compost, and just put the plant in, and then just water slowly and deeply and less frequently than shallowly and more frequently. And what you're doing is you're encouraging the plant to grow deep roots within the soil that it's going to be in. And you're picking plants that like that soil. So I'm not putting an impatiens out there or something, right? Or a moisture loving fern. I'm picking plants that do well in dry, gravelly, Mediterranean or maritime conditions. And his theory is that if you dig the hole like we normally do and then put a bunch of compost and nice soil in there, the plant kind of treats it like a pot and grows to the edge of the pot and then stops growing. So this has been so successful, Maria. I've had, I planted like 20 kinds of lavender, sages, tons of herbs. Thyme that I bought this big is now this big. Lavenders that I bought this big are this big. So it's a ton of Mediterranean herbs. But even the alyssum, which I bought as little plugs, is like this big. And it did fry in the middle of the summer. And this is a good tip for everybody because I'd never done this before. But, and also this flat verbena that in Texas we called a sand verbena because it was a wildflower, but it's a flat verbena that has bright purple flowers. You've probably seen it before. It's sold as an annual. I tried that one too because I thought, well, I've seen verbena like this when I grew up in Texas in dry lots, and I've seen alyssum growing on the cliffs in Malibu just in sand. So I thought, well, these might work. So I put them in and they've gone like gangbusters. They're just spreading and they're really large, and they did get fried in the heat of the summer. And so I just cut them back and now they're gorgeous again in September. So I think I cut them back maybe 6 weeks ago and they're looking great. So it's just kind of, for me, this is a garden of experimentation this year, but I don't want to talk too much. So ask me any questions about that because I've got two other little experiments.
Two follow-up questions. So one, you said, so you're digging the hole and then you're putting the plant in it. Are you backfilling just with the normal soil?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're saying that the plant, then the roots are growing deeper because of the way that you're watering it. That's super interesting. Instead of thinking that you have to like fill it with compost.
Yeah.
But one thing that I do want to bring that I want to just distill after listening to you, you're such a gardener, obviously, the way that you're so perceptive in, well, if this works here, then this might work here. This is the root of what I'm working with. And this is how I have to apply it. You know, you identified that not only are you on the Cape, but you're on the narrowest part of the Cape, and this is the sandy soil issue. This is the crazy wind issue, you know, that area of the Cape is going to have. And you go from there, because I think that with a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this, when we were in our last house that we thought we were going to live in through the whole summer, so I was going to do a garden. I wanted to go like so ham from the beginning without having time to do the proper research. And I think especially when you move to a different place, it's so important to just like sit and do some research and put your little like spy suit, you know, spy hat on or your spyglass out and just kind of observe your surroundings and then go from there. I think that's a step that a lot of people miss because they just want to get your hands dirty and so, you know, itchy to get growing and get your tomatoes going, which like I'm the total cult. I mean, I'm a tomato like fiend, that then you kind of miss out on understanding and respecting the native aspect of it. And it sounds like you've paid a lot of respect to that. And on that line too, where are you doing this research? Are you going to your local nurseries? Like I know Mahoney's is an amazing nursery on the Cape. Where are you learning more about the native plants? You very cleverly used the Maritime Latin, but for people who maybe might not know that, how would you suggest figuring that out with their new space?
It's a combination of books and, you know, buying a book that's about seaside or dry gardening or gravel gardening or Mediterranean gardening. That's why that Olivier Filippi, those two books have been helpful to me. They're not native plants for the most part. So I haven't done a native garden at all, but I am interested in what the native species are here. So those are the ones I look for in the wild, but also what I find at the nursery. So I'd say for beginning gardeners, it's probably good to do a combination of a few key books plus internet research. So that's always helpful too. But I really just wanted to also push it and experiment with things I didn't know if they'd work. So for instance, there were some really pretty silvery gazanias at the nursery the other day, and they're just annuals. I think they're from South Africa. And I just thought, well, I love the colors because they were kind of a very strange apricot and a very strange salmon color. And I thought the colors looked really great. And I thought, well, let's try this kind of almost soft looking annual and see if it works, because the silver leaves kind of tipped me off that maybe, because a lot of silver leaf plants grow in a place where they need to reflect the sun.
Yeah, totally.
So the silver leaf, anything silver leaf makes me think, well, maybe it'll work in this garden, a lot of it. You know, like I have Santalina, I have a lot of sages. So those little gazanias really have done well. They also kind of fried up a little bit in the heat, but now they're doing great and they're blooming and having another series of blooms. So for me, it's kind of just close observation And I would say that you were saying that, you know, some people want to get started immediately, but I did want to get started immediately. And right. that's what I, why I did this. I contrast my approach from with what I wanted to do with a person who buys a place, wants to rip out the landscape and install a rather generic landscape that mm-hmm. they imagine is what they want. Meaning, mm-hmm. oh, I had a house that had this, 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 and this on the other side of the country. I'd like the same thing here. And that, I think, is an unsuccessful model, because I think it's very hard to just copy and paste a garden anywhere, even in the same state. It's sometimes hard. I just really want to make a garden that's about the place that I'm in, because I know that that's going to be successful. You know, I think Beth Chatto, she's another gravel garden or dry garden expert. Her name's Beth Chatto, and she has a famous garden in England. And she wrote a book called Dry Gardening, which I looked at as well. And her motto was always right place, right plant, right place was the key to success. So just make sure you got the right plant in the right place and you're done. That's all you need to do.
And also, I would say the mindset also is important of this is experimental. Some of this will work. Some of this won't. You know, I think homeownership for a lot of people when they're starting out, I think you wrote an Instagram post this week, or no, it was your letter to the editor, I think, a couple of months back, of like, you buy a house and then all of a sudden there are all these things that happen that you don't know, right. You know, that's going to happen in your gardens too. And maybe framing that whole first year as an experimental, educational experience, instead of, I bought this house, I have to make the landscape perfect in my first year, and I have all of this pressure. Because I think it was interesting, I had some listeners, you know, I told listeners I was speaking to you, I had them write in, and it was interesting how overwhelmed people were feeling. And it was a lot of questions on how to manage the overwhelm of it all. So yeah. Maybe just approaching with that experimental mindset also kind of sets you up to have some more fun, I think, mm-hmm. too.
And for your, you know, you don't have to solve all the problems at once. You don't have to worry. I mean, there's some neighborhoods where the neighborhood pressure is a little bit high, in the fact that if it doesn't look great,
yeah,
people, you know, my little lake cabin was in a lake community, and people would stop by because I wasn't mowing my lawn, because I had daffodils. And so some of the folks would stop by, especially some of the older folks would stop by and really be unhappy that the lawn wasn't mown, you know. So for me, it was fine. I didn't care. Yeah. But they thought it was super messy and was like a sign that, you know, neglect. And for me, it was like, no, I'm experimenting with this lawn with full of daffodils. And this is part of the process. I have to leave these leaves up. But yeah, giving yourself permission to not solve all of it at once, I think, is key. And I feel overwhelmed by the property. So that's why I did the three experiments. And the so that's the dry garden, the gravel garden.
Let's dive into the other experiments.
And then the other two is raised beds, which I've done before, but I really wanted to see how they do here. So I did raised beds. And I just bought the corners from Gardener Supply that they sell. They sell these great metal corners. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of bang in your 2x4s or 2x10s or whatever. And then you just kind of have this raised bed garden. That's been really fun. And that's where I put the edibles, all the tomatoes, and very successful. It's not looking great now because of, you know, kind of late summer wind down. But in the springtime, it was just so great to go out there. And I had so many different kinds of lettuces and all of that. And then the third experiment was
your meadow, right?
Well, it's I'm calling it a mini meadow. It really is just they had to put in a new septic, which is great, when they sold the house. So they had to run a line of electricity for a certain kind of pump. So they did kind of a gash in front of the house next to the driveway that was just turned out to be a sand pit. And it was, you know, just kind of a depression of sand, no good soil in there. So I was like, well, I don't know what to do with this. Ultimately, it might be probably be a combination of boxwood and perennials. And I could imagine all sorts of beautiful old fashioned perennials and boxwood and punctuation. And, you know, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. But right now I don't want to look at this big sand, you know, pit. So I just, you know, bought a few truckloads of compost and soil from the local nursery. And they just came, dumped it out in the driveway. And I moved it all with shovel and wheelbarrow and filled in a really long kind of just bed. And since it's pristine and it was not weedy because it's new soil, and it probably was 6 to 8 feet deep is all over the sand, has good drainage. I just decided I'm going to try seed sown annuals, mainly hand thrown. So I decided to do a thing where I just bought all the annuals I could think of that are, and this is where studying the seed packets very important for hardy annuals or half hardy annuals. I wanted to find annuals that I could in the late winter and spring throw down, like poppies, larkspurs, cosmos. Cosmos I did a little later. And so I did this progression of bloom with seed packets. And to kind of augment it a little bit, I did get order dahlias because I love dahlias. And I popped in a few salvias, the big salvias, like Guarnitica and Euglenosa and all those. But I love the big salvias as well. So right now it's just this beautiful, it came out so well. It kind of started with a low group of them, the most glorious parade of poppies I've ever grown. And alyssum along the front, all from seed. It's been a really great experiment in trying stuff, not being too concerned if it looks great all the time. And when people come over, I'm of course like full of excuses because people show up here and they've seen, also let's talk a minute about Instagram. I'm showing, you know, a little slice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
showing
this little well-edited, I'm an editor
curated,
too. So I'm
showing, curated.
I'm showing this one little editor spot. Well edited beauty spot. And then this is super horrible. And this is super horrible on other
sides. Of course.
So when people come over here, I always have to explain the experiments because I want them to know this isn't really about impressing you when you roll up to the house and making you think everything's perfect. It's really about me learning what grows well here so that when we do make our grand garden plan, mm-hmm. which is the overwhelming part, mind you, because that's why my brain goes, which way to go? It's given me so much fun to do this because, as I said, I didn't know when I would leave, you know, so to have the seed sowed annuals, it didn't cost that much. So for some reason I had to go back to work in the middle of summer and then things were going to die. Well, I spent some money on some seeds. That's the end of it. I'm not losing a bunch of shrubbery and perennials. So,
yeah, I think the annual route is so smart, especially in that first year, because you know, either way you're losing it, you know, so you might as well just also, I'm all about mindset and gardening, but just knowing that you don't need to get attached to it being a peony that like you need 3 years before it really takes off. So I have actually a couple of friends and neighbors who have tried the seed sowing and it's been unsuccessful. And I had a moment when I like ran around New York City, like sprinkling seeds everywhere.
Yeah, seed bombs and stuff.
Yeah, like a crazy person. You're laying the bed and then you're hand sprinkling or you're like actually sticking the seeds in the soil? What worked for you?
I sprinkled most of them. Some of them require a little bit more of a poke in, like I put in 4 o'clocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And not all of them have been successful. Like I didn't see one larkspur. Mm-hmm. And I put a lot of larkspurs in. I saw a few larkspurs, but I didn't see many larkspurs. And I put a lot of larkspurs in. I've always loved those. Those did well in Texas when I was a kid. And I always remember them. And then, you know, and animals. Like I had rabbits eating stuff. I know it. So I put in so many. And these were things I poked in. I did poke in sunflowers. Those aren't, you know, it depends on what type of seed you have. Some seeds say, you know, they need to be a half inch or an inch down. So those I poke in. But the others, the ones that were the most successful are the cosmos, which are scatterer. Those are easy to scatter. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds like the poppies.
Yeah. The poppies. And then the alyssum was great as well. And then I also tried some painted, I think they're called painted daisies and some other things that were new to me. Clarkia, I'd never grown Clarkia. That one did amazingly well. I always thought Clarkia was some old fashioned annual that no one grew, but I saw the seed packets and it looked really pretty. And there was these beautiful kind of salmon-y colors. So I threw those all out. The funny part is, you know, I throw them all out in this empty bed and then the rains come and I didn't know this had happened, but it kind of rolled them all toward the front. So I had this big band of, you know, color in the front. And so then I would start having to kind of go in and try to move them backwards a little
right.
bit. So I did, and luckily if they're small
then you've
enough,
got to interfere with nature. Just
yeah, I got to interfere
just
a little bit. I think my main tip, Maria, would be that I think I was successful in my first year thing because it was kind of virgin soil because it was imported. So I think if even now I can see the weeds there that I'm not on top of that are probably self-seeding. So what I'll probably do is if I do it next year, I'd probably put down another layer of that soil to try to suppress that weed layer a little bit. And then I would probably rake the whole thing out. And that's where it's kind of nice. There's no shrubs or anything perennial in there. I can just kind of clear the decks and put another layer down and start it again. But as I said, ultimately, when the garden is designed, I don't want it to just be that meadow because there are plenty of times in the year toward the end of the season where it looks a little ratty. So you do need the structure of boxwood or a hedge or something.
And just a brief because it's all about the soil, right? When you move, you've got to test your soil, figure out what you're lacking, figure out how to amend it. So what's your strategy for that? Did you get your soil tested? Maybe you're at the point where you can kind of just figure it out, but what would you suggest for a first year person?
I definitely, when I came and saw the property, even for the first time, I definitely took the soil and looked at it, you know, and there's that test you do where you hold the soil and you see how much clay it has. You can grab soil, clinch it really hard, open your palm, that test, you know, and then if you hit it, it falls apart and all that. I knew mine was super sandy, so I didn't really test it for nutrients because I probably will if I get serious, but, you know, I need to know the pH and all that. But right now I just know it's super sandy and free draining and probably very lean. And that was surprising to me too. I thought lilacs wanted richer soil, but when I researched it, I thought, well, and this is a good thing too, you research all this stuff. Don't just do what you think might happen. Like with the lilacs, I thought, well, to get them to bloom next year, I should feed them. And I went and looked online and it was like, don't feed them. They like lean soil. And if you feed them, you'll get only leaves. So I think that's why I did get great bloom from these neglected lilacs, is they're growing in sand. So
interesting.
Who knew that lilacs like sand? Did they seem to like sand?
That's so interesting and goes back to research. I mean, we were going to have a tips portion, but I feel like you've sown so many tips in this conversation.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Always pun intended with me. But, you know, it sounds like do your research. You can start gardening immediately, but go with the right mindset. Try annuals. See what you've already got. Start restoring. You mentioned restoring the lilacs. When you say restoring and cutting back, for people who might not understand what that means, the thought is that you're cutting these back dramatically in order to kind of instigate more growth with that auxin and kind of triggering the tree to grow more?
Yes, I'd say, and the word I use is rejuvenation, which is kind of the term they use when you have something overgrown.
Okay.
So both the privet and the lilac, I don't want to cut them. You can cut them. Like one of the lilacs got cut all the way to the ground because they had to move a propane tank. Mm-hmm. So one of the historic lilacs was cut down to 6 inches and it's looking beautiful. Like the leaves right now are, it's probably waist high after being cut back in the winter.
Isn't that amazing how quickly these plants?
Yeah, it's waist high. The leaves are glossy. I mean, it just looks great. But I'll probably not get any flowers this year. So to get, because I am impatient and I want it all, I do what they call relay pruning. And you could relay prune it half back, meaning every other branch could be hacked back to a certain level. It's also the level you want to hack it back to. You can do multiple levels. But what I chose to do was a third.
Okay.
So I'm going to do it over 3 years. And that's another patience versus impatience.
Okay.
So I'm going to, I cut back a third of the branches, I don't think they call them canes, third of the branches on all the rose bushes, the three remaining rose bushes, so that I will have, because, and right after they bloom, because as in many shrubs, the good time to prune them is right after they bloom before they start setting next year's buds. Mm-hmm. So I did that right after they bloom. And so the hope will be that I'll get fuller plants with flat, probably more leaves at the bottom, flowers at the top, then cut back the flowering bits, let the leaves come up the following years, and then those will bloom. So it's kind of this, that's why they call it relay pruning, because you're kind of never losing the bloom, but you're rejuvenating the plant at the same time.
It's a long game moment. Sounds a lot like bonsai. We just did a bonsai episode, and I can't believe the patience and discipline that this bonsai expert I interviewed has.
I can't do it. I don't have the patience for bonsai. And also, I'm a slightly, I'm kind of a neglectful parent. Like I'm very devoted. And then I'm kind of neglectful at the same time if I get busy with work or whatever.
Totally.
And in the old days, you know, before the pandemic, I traveled a lot. So I always had to factor that in, that there would be times things were neglected. But I think for most people, the key is if you're starting out in a new garden, give yourself a break, experiment, watch and look around, do your research, watch and look around what your neighbors, what's successful in your neighborhood.
Make some friends. Yeah. Talk to your neighbors.
Make some friends. And then maybe don't that first year, you know, spend all that money installing this perfect landscape and hoping it all works. You know, maybe do what I'm doing. It is about cost. I'm making sure that I'm not wasting money. I don't want to waste my effort. And I don't want to waste money. So I did waste some seeds on rabbit food. But other than that, I haven't really, like in the dry garden, for me, the big realization is I probably put in 30 or 40 perennials of small sizes and all of them have done well. I haven't really lost anything. So that's been a great experiment in that gravel garden. So
that's amazing. And then I feel like playing the long game like that too, you're going to have so much more appreciation for it because every plant you plant is going to be a lesson learned and improvement off of whatever plant fail happened in the first year. And I think over time, that'll tell such a more interesting story of your life in that house than I got here and I need it to have curb appeal immediately. And, you know, there's a time and place for that as well. But I think the long game is pretty cool. Now, I have to ask you, because you're the herb expert and you're the herb guy, your book is...
Not the herb. I like herbs. I'm not the herb expert.
You're the herb guy.
There's plenty of people who know a lot more than I do about herbs. Yeah.
Okay. But what are your three favorite herbs that you're growing this year that you would suggest, that you've loved so much that you would maybe suggest us to grow next year in our gardens?
I'm going to mention culinary herbs and not say medicinal, because I don't really use medicinal herbs very much, although I love them. But culinary herbs for flavor and fragrance, I'd say a big thing for me everywhere I've been, you know, I'm from Texas, so I always have iced tea in the fridge, always an iced tea pitcher going. And over the years, I've kind of developed some tea herbs that I really love growing. And so I'd say I really can't live without lemon verbena in the garden. And I love lemon verbena for tea. I add it to black tea. I drink it by itself. I also love holy basil or tulsi, which is an Indian basil. And in India, it's very sacred. And so I'm just growing it, you know, for tea, but I also recognize that it's a powerful plant with a lot of history. But tulsi is one of my favorite plants. Not everybody loves the fragrance. It has kind of an unusual fragrance and very unlike other basils.
Okay.
So I grow tulsi. And then for food, we talked about our mutual love of chives. I love chives. And I think it's, you know, they're even called common chives. They're super common, but
they're so hardy.
They're hardy. And it gives you a very mild, I think, sophisticated onion flavor that when you don't want to be overpowered by an onion, right? Like a raw onion, chives are just that subtle onion flavor. Another plant I love is chervil, which is another subtle flavor, a little bit like tarragon. And that one is really my favorite, probably my favorite seed sown herb, because chervil, it doesn't do well now, but plant it in the late winter and all spring and early summer, you'll have just, you know, frosts of this beautiful little ferny plant that has this really fine, it's very French kind of flavor, a little bit like tarragon, not as licorice-y. But I love tarragon too. And then my other favorite that we were talking about this weekend, actually, because I have a friend who is visiting and she's a really great cook and she's Italian American. And I asked her if she liked marjoram, because I love marjoram. It's one of my favorites. And and she said, no, I don't like marjoram. I said, is it too soapy? And she said, yeah, it's too soapy. And last night we had dinner and she's from coastal Connecticut. And she made this really great fish preparation that her family makes, which is a piece of halibut or something with chopped tomatoes, onions, and garlic on the top, and then she puts breadcrumbs on that, and then it's baked, right? Very simple, but really, really delicious and very kind of, you know, feels very Italian. And I was eating it and I said, where did you get oregano? I don't think I have oregano right now, because I did plant it, but, you know, I kind of lost track of the oregano. And she said, I didn't. She goes, no, I went out and got some oregano. And, you know, marjoram and oregano are so close botanically that people don't even really know how to describe the difference. It's just a smell and a taste. And she goes, oh, that was marjoram. But she put thyme in with the marjoram, which made the marjoram kind of shift with the thyme flavor to oregano. So it's kind of funny that she found oregano. That's awesome. Yeah. But I'd say marjoram is one of my favorites too. I love it on grilled vegetables and most anything, but.
Yeah, we had a 6-foot hydroponic planter in our home in the winter and grew all the herbs in it. And fresh herbs. I mean, I've been growing chives. The other thing is too, lazy girl cook, like the chives, you don't even have to get your knife out. You can just kind of cut them all just right into the scrambled eggs in the morning, which is like,
I just grab it with my thumbnail basically.
Yeah. And it's super easy, but, oregano is another one where I always used to just cook with it dried, but learning to cook with it, just adding it fresh, it makes it's a different texture and just another layer of flavor. It's so good.
I think having fresh herbs is a key to my happiness, because of course I can go buy the plastic clamshells with herbs, which I do in the dead of winter.
Of course.
Even in winter, even in Des Moines, when I had a house that had a little cool porch, I had a window box that was indoors that had herbs in it. And they kind of limped through February because of the heater and everything. But it just makes a big difference to me to be able to walk over and grab it versus having to think to buy it. And invariably, we all know the image of that little plastic plastic thing with herbs in it. And then it's all moldy and dried in your fridge and, you know, all that. So it's just really nice, I think, for making an ordinary meal better, having those fresh herbs, if you can have it, is wonderful. And I also have a few houseplant herbs. The most longstanding is an allspice plant, which I got from Logie's Greenhouse in Connecticut. And allspice is not something.
That's awesome.
And the leaves are like bay leaf, but they have an allspice flavor. So it's a great plant. It's a great plant to use for soup or stew or whatever. So
hot houseplant tip. I've never heard of that as a houseplant before.
It's easy to grow. I've had it for 7 or 8 years. And there's even been a time on vacation where we kind of left it behind accidentally and it lost all its leaves and it came back. It never makes the berries, which is what you use for spice.
Okay.
But the leaf is so aromatic that it becomes another way. It's kind of like a bay leaf relative.
I'm all about a smelly houseplant. I love scents. I'm all about scents in general. And any sort of scented houseplant, I'm totally here for.
Yeah, great.
Well, it has been delightful to chat with you.
I know, it went so fast.
I will definitely be keeping tabs with your garden on Instagram. Where can people follow along with you? I'm giving away my secrets, my secret influencers that I like to follow. But where can people?
Oh, I'm not an influencer. Don't say that.
or gardeners.
My account name is Steporr, S-T-E-P-O-R-R on Instagram. And then, of course, I'm at Better Homes and Gardens. And my main social media platform is Instagram. I don't do Facebook anymore after a few years, which has been nice just with all the noise out there. But Instagram has been fun. We all love Instagram because, you know, you get to really absorb inspiration and follow people and all that. And so look out for some more posts because I haven't even done. And as you know, Maria, these posts take a lot of effort, like to pull the stories together. And so I haven't even really pulled my dry gardening report yet. So I'm going to be doing that, showing that progression through the spring and the summer and the late summer. I'm going to show how the whole dry gardening thing went as well.
This will be perfect.
And then also, I haven't even done the house yet. So we have to talk about the house renovation too. So it's one of those things on the Instagram, you're showing stuff, but it's a lot of work. Sometimes you just pull the ideas together. So it's
totally
fun.
I have like a full month of unedited photos and videos because I've just been enjoying my summer and I haven't had time to put them on Instagram.
Well, it's a very nice fall activity and great for winter too, because we'll be thrilled to look at all these beautiful summer pictures in the winter. So
totally. And I can't recommend Better Homes and Gardens enough. I also want to say, I've never read letters from the editor before, but I love your letter every month.
Thank you so much. I have to give credit where credit is due there. When I worked at House and Garden, the editor-in-chief, Dominique Browning, wrote first-person editor letters that weren't necessarily listing what's in the issue, which is kind of traditionally what people do, is they kind of say, check out page, you know. And I do link to what's in the issue. I always try to link what's in the issue. But I also felt like, especially with the past, you know, years and conflict in the air and just people feeling unhappy and unsettled, creating a safe space for people to feel like they can enter Better Homes and Gardens and feel calm. That's what the ed letter is for me. I think of it as an emotional welcome mat. Not that I want people to rub their feet, you know, scrape their feet on me, but it's kind of like that entry into the magazine. And I want it to feel empowering, comforting, and like we're all here together and we're trying to work together as humanity to make things better. So that's kind of what I try to talk about a little bit, is combination of memory, a combination of things I'm doing, combination of stuff floating around. But as you can imagine, writing editor's letters during the COVID pandemic has been a challenge because you don't know what's coming 3 months from now, right? So it's very hard to write an editor's letter and imagine what's going to land because we do the magazine 2 or 3 months in advance, and that's not easy these days. So, thank you so much for saying so.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's my favorite time of the month. Everyone go subscribe. Also, I mean, since you've worked there too, Martha Stewart Living is the other one that I get every month. So yeah,
Martha's a great magazine and it was so great to learn and work from her. I have to say about Martha that being there and being a garden editor and working with her was such a great experience because she has such great knowledge and she wants things expressed properly. She doesn't want bad information out there. And so you really have to watch what you're putting out. And I think she's also a good role model in the sense that as she ages, that's the nice part about gardening. You can continue to learn new stuff. And Martha loves to learn and she wants to hear about that new plant and she wants to make a new garden space. And so I don't think she'll ever stop gardening. And my suspicion about her, you know, I'm not analyzing her, but I'd say, I think one reason she likes gardening is that she can't control it. And that's, I think, one reason gardeners like it, is that you can do your best, but Mother Nature's always going to throw you a curveball.
Oh, 100%. I mean, 2020 is gardening in a, you know, in a nutshell. Well, that's awesome. Can't wait to keep in touch with you on Instagram.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate it, Maria.
This was so fun.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for this conversation. I've really admired Stephen for so long, and I was super excited when he agreed to come on the show. And I'm really looking forward to watching his garden projects and experimentations continue to grow and unfurl. If you guys are doing your own garden rejuvenations, restorations, starting from scratch, I want to hear about it. So please tag me on Instagram when you share whatever garden projects you're doing. All of Stephen's personal links are in the show notes, as well as Better Homes and Gardens. If you're not subscribing to it, you should. I'm obsessed. Like I said, it's like the highlight of my month. And plant friends, guess what? By the time I bring you the next episode, I'm going to be married. Finally, this is our third wedding date. We've postponed twice due to COVID. Billy and I are so excited. Stay tuned on Instagram and in the Bloom and Grow Garden Party platform. I will try to be sharing little snippets, but also like really excited to take some time off, close my computer and have a honeymoon. So we will have fully scheduled programming. I batched my episodes. We have amazing episodes coming to you for the month of October. So stay tuned, stay subscribed. And until next time, my sweet plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're there subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section and leave us a review? It would be tremendously helpful for the show, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more planty content or ways to help and support the show or engage with our community, we've got a ton of options for you. So first, there's the free Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test. It is a super fun 3-minute test that I made for you that pairs you with your plant parent personality profile, where you'll learn your planty strengths and weaknesses and get a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you. The test lives at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality, and you have to let me know what your results are on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. If you're interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio, consider becoming a Patreon plant friend of the show. Patreon plant friends are members of the community who support the show monetarily on a monthly basis for as little as $4 a month, and these magical humans help support the show and bring our content to as many planty eyes and ears as possible. Once you join, you'll also get the secret password to our Facebook group, which I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. We have a lot of fun over there. You can become a Patreon plant friend at patreon.com/bloomandgrowradio. And of course, you can also just join our newsletter that I like to call the Garden Club. When you join our Garden Club, you'll receive a free download of the exclusive Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print, which is so adorable. And I'll slide into your inboxes, usually only around twice a month, with plant care tips, recent episodes, and announcements. You can join at bloomandgrowradio.com/community. And for anything else, plant friends, I'm here for you. So feel free to drop me a line when you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe even if you're a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. Thanks again for listening. It is my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, propagate knowledge and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in.
There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.